You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 97, Throwing iPhones from a Blimp. Today on the podcast, Michael and I talked yet again about iPhone 8 pricing and what the iPhone 7 most likely will end up being, and more Star Trek Discovery follow-up about the Klingons, the official news about what they actually will look like. They're not going to be a new race. They're just newly designed Klingons, which I guess as Star Trek fans, we just have to learn to accept, just like when Star Trek The Next Generation aired and we first saw the Klingons, they looked absolutely nothing like how they did on the original series. So we'll see how that plays out. So stay tuned for that discussion, which is coming up next on The Impromptu. When everything is broken and nothing's going right.
So, another week and another barrage of iPhone pricing conjecture and rumors and counter conjecture and think pieces and so on and so on and so on.
Oh, you mean the iPhone 8 is now free?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they're doing.
They're just going to throw them out of a blimp because they're made of liquid metal. So when they hit the ground, they'll just be fine and people will kill each other trying to grab one. Yeah, you know, Tim Cook will just get his magic sack from the blimp and just be like, iPhones for everyone. And then death and chaos follow.
Right. So Gruber's been writing about this, linking to other articles again.
Yes. Gruber has been writing, the Macalope has been writing, Forbes has been writing, everybody's been writing. And they just keep going back and forth in circles. And there's basically two ideas. One, the iPhone is going to be deliberately priced so that people will not want to buy it. And two, it will be so popular, they will be unable to make enough of them. Which sounds a bit like a paradox, as the Macalope points out in his article. And I would have to agree, because you can't really have it both ways. I mean, you can sort of have it both ways, but if you price something to the point where most people couldn't possibly afford it, you will not get sales. Conversely, if you don't price it high enough, then you get demand where there's basically some fine lines in the pricing where, I don't know, it's like walking on a tightrope. You have to price it so high that it will discourage enough people, but also not completely alienate everyone. And they have to make enough of them that they can meet that demand, even if they can't meet the demand that they would have if it were priced lower than that amount. So the way I'm thinking of it is, it's like the jet black iPhone 7 Plus. It cost a little bit more. It was 128 gigs or higher only. So it started at a higher tier.
I don't remember it costing more.
Yeah, jet black cost like a little bit more than the matte black one. So if you got a 128 gig matte black 7 Plus versus a jet black 7 Plus, it was like a difference of $10, $15, something like that. There was like a premium because it's a premium finish. It's not the same as matte black because matte black is just anodized aluminum, whereas jet black is this crazy triple layer polished capillary dye iron particle bath Johnny Ive white room nonsense. So they charged a little bit of a premium for it. And because it was 128 gig only or higher, It started at a higher price to begin with. And so that discouraged people from wanting it. But conversely, it was such a pretty phone that a lot of people wanted it. So people that weren't discouraged by the price bought it in droves, and Apple wasn't able to keep up with the demand, to the point where the Jet Black 7 Plus was constrained for quite a while. I recall that shipments didn't start until October for some customers. Like, so many people bought the initial supply that it was pushed back to October. Now, as with any estimate that Apple does, it was a conservative estimate because some of the people that bought it and had it ship in October actually had it ship the last 2 weeks of September. So everything kind of shifted forward as they increased their production capability. But I think it paints an accurate picture of what the iPhone 8 will probably look like. I think we're talking about a Jet Black 7 Plus. I don't think we're talking about an iPhone edition. I think of it as the difference between an Apple Watch Sport and an Apple Watch Steel, not the difference between an Apple Watch Steel and an Apple Watch Edition, because the Edition, it's the same product. It's just made of a material that makes it cost like three times as much, which is absurd.
Yeah, I mean.
And most people are not going to buy it,
right?
Because it doesn't look any better. It just looks different. And it costs way more. So I don't think that's how the new iPhone is going to be. I think it's going to be a lot more like Sport versus Steel. You've got similar functionality, but you've got this look that's just so much more professional and luxury. And you have way more band options with the Steel than you do with the Sport, because there's a lot of bands that have the Steel adapters. The classic buckle, the modern buckle, the Milanese loop, the Link bracelet, all of them. Steel adapters. You can use those on the Sport, but they just don't quite look right. Because then you've got steel sandwiched into aluminum. So I think it'll kind of be like that, where it's priced higher, but not so much higher that it's completely unreasonable. So I think we could see the iPhone 8 start at maybe around $939 US, $959 US, something like that. So that would be about $1,100 Canadian. For probably,
so try to get it under 1,000 US at least to not totally shock people.
Yeah, I think it'll start under 1,000, and that'll be for like a 64 gig model. Or they just start at 128 and they charge $999 base model, and then you can go up to 512 for like $1,299 US. Something like that. So yeah, like I kind of see it sitting at that price tier, because at that point you're kind of, it's more expensive than an iPad Pro. It's almost as expensive as a MacBook Air. Or no, it is as expensive as a MacBook Air. It's almost as expensive as a MacBook. And I feel like even at that price point, there would still be a sizable audience for it, because people really care about their smartphones a lot more than a laptop, a lot more than a desktop. People's phones are their lives. And for people that upgrade every year, or for people that upgrade every 2 years or every 3 years, it's a big deal. So,
and smartwatches are not there yet, but that's, I mean, they may get there, but it's because of the size, right?
Yeah. And for tablets and laptops, people buy them much less frequently which we've covered before. Like, iPad is probably on a 4 or 5 year cycle. Macs are on a 4 or 5 year cycle, maybe even 6 or 7 years, depending. Yeah, like phones are the quickest turnaround out of any of their products. So I think they have to price it at an amount that's not completely unfair, but is at a definite premium compared to their other iPhones. So I think hitting that slightly below $1,000 US mark for the base model is probably a safe bet. It could be just over. I'm not sure which way they'll go. It'll either be just under or just over $1,000. And I could also see them having something like Jet Black or Space Black from the Apple Watch for the mid-tier and up. So the base model you might only get in matte black. And then if you want the shiny finish, you have to go 128 or higher. Same as with the 7 Plus. In which case, it would then be over $1,000, probably close to $1,100, maybe even above that. That just feels right to me, I think. It might skew a little higher. Like, I could be off by $100. It could start at $1,100 or $1,199, which still wouldn't be that bad. Like,
no, it wouldn't. But I mean,
we're it's cutting it close. Like, if it starts at $1,199, then the top end model has to be $1,399 or $1,499. So then we're really getting into, okay, this is maybe too far now. But yeah, I think there will be a model of the phone that's at a comfortable price. It's maybe not going to give you everything you want. Like, you're probably going to have to compromise on storage size. Like, if you're used to 128 or 256, you're going to have to go down a peg if you want this phone. And that's probably okay. But if you really want that storage, unfortunately, you'll probably have to go with the 7S.
And there will be people that will do that. I'm sure they will.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. And I think that is what the 7S will exist for.
Right.
Like I said the last time we talked about this, I think a lot of people have gotten it wrong about the 7S. I think the 7S is probably just the iPhone 8 without OLED and without that design. So in that case, really, it's more or less the same phone. You're just not getting all of the advanced stuff that you would want. So, I mean, it's still going to have wireless charging. It's still going to have the AR sensors, probably. It's still going to have the A11 chip. You're just not going to get the OLED screen. You're not going to get that seamless edge-to-edge look. And you probably won't get Touch ID in the screen. There are schematics of a low bezel phone with Touch ID on the back. I honestly think that could be the 7S, because that would be a large low bezel LED screen with Touch ID. The only problem with that is that the back appears to be aluminum. In which case, how would wireless charging work? Maybe
then you don't get that feature.
Yeah, maybe the 7S doesn't. Yeah, maybe the 7S doesn't have wireless.
But it would not be a bad phone. It would still be, I think, an upgrade from the 7.
Oh yeah,
because it would have the latest processor in there.
Latest processor, latest a much GPU. Bigger low bezel yeah. LED screen.
Right.
The only caveat would be that Touch ID moves to the back. But then you still get the whole new software keyboard. You get the whole new software home button, touch bar kind of thing at the bottom of that screen. So that'll be the same across the 7S and the Pro. I'm pretty sure it'll be the Pro. Like, if there's a 7S, it's going to be the Pro.
To me, this sounds more like the difference between when you buy a car.
Yeah.
And you get the price difference between the regular model and the, like, GT package.
Yeah.
But most of the time, it's the same engines, the same chassis. Everything's pretty much the same. The only thing that you're getting better is a better sound system, maybe better speakers, just some luxury items. But the power plant is the same. Likewise, with the iPhone, Apple doesn't want to give you an inferior processor or an inferior GPU. They want you to be able to play the latest games, to do the latest things that you want to do at the same level. They don't want it to be a lesser phone necessarily.
Yeah.
It's just that the iPhone 8 will be premium in the way that it's just a bit of a luxury item. But it's not a must-have.
No. Like, it's not going to be dramatically better than the 7S. That's the thing. Obviously, it's going to be shiny. It's going to look nicer than the 7S. You're going to get that beautiful OLED screen that almost covers the entire front of the phone. You're going to have Touch ID in the screen, all of these nice things. And yeah, you're going to have to pay a premium for that. And yeah, it's going to be supply constrained because they're not going to be able to make as many OLED panels because they have to rely on Samsung. And Samsung needs OLED panels for their own phones. So that's a difficult proposition, but I don't think you'll be disappointed if you have to get the 7S because you're still going to get 85% of what's in the Pro.
Why would Samsung even bother putting a screen on their phone? I mean, it's just going to explode anyway and melt.
it'll have sexist language when referring to its assistant.
Yeah, there was that announcement this week that I heard.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. Yeah. I just imagine like the effect of like a Samsung phone exploding and melting and like melting into your, like melting through everything, like through your floor in your apartment. Kind of like, have you ever seen like, you know what happens to a nuclear reactor when the control rods aren't cooled and they basically melt through the casing into the ground? That's kind of...
Or like Alien.
I know that doesn't happen, but it's kind of amusing to think of it that way.
Yeah.
So what else is good?
But
we should probably wrap on this because we've talked in previous episodes that people are tired about smartphone pricing.
Probably. I mean, we're almost there.
We're almost there.
In August.
We're almost
a month away from
hang on for a little while longer.
And I would expect part leaks any day now. It's got to be any day now because they're ramping up.
August is around the corner.
August is
prime time.
That's definitely the prime time. Like we should be in the middle of Foxconn churning these things out faster than should be humanly possible. I think everything I just said is probably the closest to what is actually going to happen. I think we're going to have a 7S. It'll be 85% of the way to the iPhone Pro, which will basically be next year's iPhone today. That'll be the marketing. It'll be everything that's in next year's iPhone is in this phone. It's going to cost more. You're going to want it. Unfortunately, we can't make like 100 million of them, but we're going to try and meet demand. But if you can't get one, the 7S is still a great phone and you won't be disappointed with it. Like, I think that'll be the primary messaging. The 7S is a great phone, but then we have this phone that's basically the future today. So if they position it that way, I don't see how anyone can really complain. If you're not able to get a Pro, it'll suck. I mean, if you don't pre-order one at midnight, you're probably going to be screwed for months. Let me put it that way. Like, if you don't get a Pro pre-ordered, locked in, day one, that shipment prediction, it'll say, like, March or something, Like,
I don't think it'll be that bad. We'll see. You might not get one till maybe November or something.
Yeah, right? Like it'll be 6 weeks. It'll be like the AirPods, but perpetually shipping in 6 weeks.
On a contract, as hard as they are, I always find that if you get a new phone on a new contract, the telephone companies always seem to have them. It's just that people, they always have stock because not everyone can just upgrade. They're not always eligible for a new phone.
Yeah.
Most of the time, though, you can get the harder to get phone if you're willing to go on a new contract, right?
Yeah, the carriers not usually always.
Depends on the color, like that rose gold.
Yeah,
iPhone when it first came out was like impossible. Everyone wanted that color.
Yeah,
and the gold one too. When the gold came out, it's like everybody wanted that.
Oh yeah, that's why I try to be boring and not get the fancy new colors.
Yeah,
that's why I went with matte black instead of jet black.
Okay, so why don't we move on?
But yeah, so that's that. We also have follow-up about Star Trek because Comic-Con is in full swing as we speak. And
happening now.
Happening like right now. Right now, the past few days. And Star Trek Discovery was there talking about the show and revealing some props. And some of the props that they showed off were outfits for the Klingons.
Oh, God.
They are not some random new alien race. They are not prehistoric Klingons.
My fears are coming.
They're not Klingons from an alternate dimension. They are how the Klingons have always looked and will always have looked.
Do we really want to talk about this? Like, I feel like I might cry. I'm trying to keep an open mind because for me, the most important thing is the writing, but it seems like, and I guess on some levels I can appreciate and respect that it seems like they just, you know, continuity be damned, they want to basically reinvent / reboot Star Trek as their own thing. Like, this is how Star Trek is now. In 2017.
Yeah, I mean,
which I can understand.
Yes and no. I mean,
but is that necessarily a good idea? Like, you take an established character, race, a whole race, and you're just going to change it now?
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. And then there's the Islamic outer shell on that show. What is going on? What the hell is that?
Yeah. So on one of the costume descriptions, it was like, yeah, I think we need to pull up the exact block quote because otherwise it'll be misconstrued.
Well, I remember seeing the caption and it said Islamic outer shell. I had to do a double take. Like, did they really spell it like that? As far as I know, there's only one definition for Islamic. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. Islamic?
Yeah. Islamic. Okay, hold on.
Is this weird?
I've got
all the names you could potentially make up for a piece of science fiction, you take a real word from...
No. Like
it's Islamic, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's referring to
Islam.
Yeah, of course.
Religion.
No, that's literally what it's referring to. They're talking about their inspiration for the design, not like, oh, they are actually Islamic.
Oh, so they're not calling it that?
No. No, it's just because
everybody has this impression. Though. Everybody's talking about this.
I think you...
Like, read all the comments on that blog post. They're all like, what the hell is an Islamic outer shell?
Okay, well, that was not anything about the Klingons specifically. That was just like, this is where we found inspiration for the design.
So they're looking to cultural references too.
Yeah. So like one of these, they have...
It's just weird to capture a dagger. That photo though.
They have a dagger and it says, the daggers, helmets, and full suits have embraced and augmented the cultural notes from the original series Klingons, employing a mixture of Middle Eastern, Mongolian, and Byzantine influences to achieve the Klingon aesthetic. Do you remember which photo had the thing about...
It was one of the ships.
Was it one of the ships?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was right under the ship. It was just weird. It just made me think, like, is it powered by Allah or something? Like, what the hell's going on here?
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. Islamic outer shell.
You can see how somebody
pearlescent interior shell. Okay, I see.
Like if it would be just as weird to caption that photo with Christian outer shell. Like that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's kind of odd. Okay. I guess what they were going for is that it's an intricate pattern that resembles Islamic designs.
What you're saying now makes perfect sense, but captioning that photo like that, you have to admit that's a weird way of putting it.
Okay. I see what's going on here. Okay. So obviously there are these intricate designs on all the new Klingon stuff, and one particular one is Islamic inspired. There was actually a really cool exhibit at the Louvre when I was in Paris in 2013. They had a whole wing dedicated to Islamic art, and they had all of these beautiful floor mosaics and brass sculptures and all of these things. And yeah, like they had some very intricate designs that totally could work for this new vision of what the Klingons are, because they seem to be going for something a lot more ornate, something a lot more ritual driven.
Ancient. Which the Klingons always were.
Yeah.
I mean, they do have a rich culture and a rich background they've invented for this for this race. So, you know.
Yeah, and
I'm sure in some ways the next generation, because that's the first time we saw the new version of the Klingons.
Yeah.
I'm sure from then on they might have taken some Middle Eastern influences in some of those designs, but they're taking it to like the nth level though.
Yeah, pretty much. The way I see this is it's the evolution of what's become possible with today's effects and makeup. So Next Generation was basically the pinnacle of what they could do at the time. And so now they've revisited, okay, what's actually possible. And maybe it's more like they're getting closer to their original vision for what the Klingons were supposed to be.
To be fair, I think they could have easily designed these props 25 years ago, but the problem is money.
Yeah.
That show just did not have the kind of budget that modern TV shows have.
No, and well,
not like they were incapable of making more intricate designs. They had to keep things relatively simple. Like they probably couldn't spend months and months and months designing props.
No.
Right?
Well, and the thing is now with CGI and with things like 3D printing, you can create intricate props in a fraction of the time.
Fair enough. So, okay, so you're right. There is a bit of a technology angle to this.
Yeah.
How that stuff enables us to make things easier to make, like you're saying, 3D printing specifically. I don't know if they are using it, but if they're not, they should be, because...
Not necessarily 3D printing, but also like CNC machines, auto lathes, like just automation for drilling these intricate designs into material.
Yeah. I mean, did they even have, because now you can feed a design to a CAD design to a machine, and you can have it like laser cut into a solid piece of metal. So
exactly.
I mean, did that even exist 30 years ago?
No, it didn't.
Probably not.
No, like that had to be done by hand painstakingly. And now you can, like you said, you can just have a laser emboss a piece of metal with some intricate Klingon design in like 5 seconds. So, yeah, with the technology we have now, so much more is possible, and they can just kind of achieve the vision that they've always had, but were never able to fully realize. So, I mean, they probably went back to some of the original concept art and brought it forward and said, okay, now that we have all of these things at our disposal, what do we want the Klingons to actually look like now that we can do all of these things and show all of these things? And this is what they've come up with. And I mean, I'll admit, as a Star Trek fan, it looks very odd compared to what we're used to, but I am willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think as long as they remain true to what the Klingons represent, I think it's not really an issue.
And keep the elements in mind of what made Star Trek appealing in the first place.
Yeah.
Like the DNA has to be there. Core elements, the ground bed like has to be there, and the writing has to be in place. The other stuff, Yes. Does it bother us as longtime fans? Yes. But let's try and keep an open mind and just see what they do with it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it'll be good and we'll just kind of forget about it over time, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's always possible.
But to play devil's advocate, the other argument, which I think is totally valid too, is, well, why not just create a new series that takes place in the future and just say that Klingons have evolved into these creatures? This is just evolution or whatever. Like, so to go back to the past and say what you know never happened, I mean, or you just have to kind of suspend your disbelief that Klingons ever look like that in the first place?
I think that's what it is, honestly, because you have to remember, like, post-original series, once Next Generation started airing, once they started doing the movies, they showed Klingons as having always looked that way. Like Undiscovered Country, Klingons did not look like the original series Klingons. They looked like Next Generation Klingons. So they basically retconned it.
And they never explained it in those movies. What was it?
The only time it's brought up is DS9, when they go back to Trouble with Tribbles. And the only reason they have to explain it with a throwaway line is because they were deliberately using footage from the original series.
And had they not done that, they probably would have never even cared or bothered to explain it.
Exactly. Because up until then, it was basically established that Klingons have always looked that way. Because they've never called attention to it.
So in a way, this is not that different than what they did in TNG. Let's just do something different. Let's make the Klingons better. Like, we have better makeup. We have better effects now.
Yeah, and
let's not just make them mostly human looking.
Yeah, and they did the same thing for Star Trek Into Darkness. They changed the way the Klingons looked there as well. And they upgraded the way their ships looked and all of these things. So it's not without precedent, and it's something that they literally have done before. And the only reason there's any kind of contention about it is because of one offhand comment in one episode of Deep Space Nine. And the only reason that comment exists is because they repurposed old footage. So
I've never asked other Star Trek fans, but I've never, again, I don't hang out on Star Trek forums or anything, but I get the impression that most people just don't really give a shit about the fact that they just changed the way the Klingons look. I mean, do they? Do you know anyone that really cares?
I don't know of anyone.
Like, to me, like I'm aware of how the Klingons looked before, and even without that explanation, like, I never cared. I'm like, this is just how they are.
They were still
you
Klingons.
You just accept it.
Yeah. And TNG was great because not only did it have more detailed Klingons, it also revealed more about their culture and who they were as a species. And, I mean, you kind of forgot about the way they used to look.
And even more so, it's way more revealing on Deep Space Nine when Worf comes on and so many episodes revolving around him and Klingon culture that you learn more about Klingons than you ever did before on any other series.
Yeah, and I think it's entirely possible that the same will happen here.
I hope so.
We'll have these new Klingon designs, but also we'll learn like a whole bunch of stuff about who they are. In some of the pictures, it talks about how the main villain, he gathers 23 different tribes of Klingons together because he wants to unify the Empire. So it sounds like during this time, they're fractured into various houses and they're not really together. So maybe it's kind of a civil war kind of thing going on where they're all just kind of split into their houses. And maybe this represents like the reformation of the Klingon Empire and the Federation getting caught up in the middle of it, perhaps. And that's interesting because it shows a different side of the Klingons, because we've always seen them as this strong, cohesive empire. And yeah, there was backstabbing and political intrigue, but they were still the empire and they still stood under the banner of the emperor. So to show them in kind of this time of chaos and strife and possible weakness is interesting because it allows us to see a side of them that we haven't seen before. Like, what do they do when it's just them and their house and that's it? They don't have the empire to fall back on because there is no empire, because all these houses are just fighting with each other. There's no one banner for them all to unite under. And that's interesting. And it presents a serious hazard to the Federation because some of the houses might be like, okay, whatever, Federation, we don't give a shit. But then other houses might be, we will kill these Federation scum and decorate our halls with their spines or whatever, you know? So, I mean, that creates a lot of interesting narrative opportunity because they could have like temporary alliances with some of the houses and then other houses come in and they get attacked by some other guy. And
yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing at least what they do.
Maybe an ancestor of Duras shows up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was actually just looking up a picture of Gowron. I'm like, well, I wonder, will we see like Gowron's father with the same crazy eyes? But no, it'll be interesting to see if they, you know, is there anything about Klingon culture that they can maybe go even further into? Are there any area, untouched areas where they, that are interesting where they can go? And the answer is probably yes. Will we see that on Star Trek Discovery? Time will tell. But you know, we can hope that they do.
I will definitely be watching.
I gotta say, it does sound, and I know we've brought this up before, but it does sound promising that they're gonna do these story arcs, that they're not gonna do some catastrophe of the week episode or some silly episode like that.
Yeah.
So at least there will be breathing room to grow the characters.
And because it takes place in the original series era, there's no holodeck to screw up every week.
There were way too many of those silly holodeck. I mean, I enjoyed some of them, but it got a little silly sometimes.
Oh no, Captain. You know,
Data gets
Professor
in trouble.
Moriarty is on the loose again.
I lost track of how many times they were actually, like, something went wrong and they were actually locked in and they couldn't get out of the holodeck. Like, how many times did that happen?
Yeah, and they waved away the whole idea of, oh, well, can't you just pry the doors open or cut them open or
like,
something?
Like, really? There's no way they can get out
if
here?
We open the doors, the whole thing will cascade and they'll be shocked to death or they'll implode or they'll be vaporized or their patterns will be disintegrated in the buffer or some bullshit. Like, there was always a reason why they couldn't just pry the doors open.
Something,
every single time.
Something inverse tachyon beam.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We have to get to the Devron system.
I'm telling you, it's bigger in the past.
Ah!
Well, I think that's about it for Star Trek.
I think so. Basically, if you're worried, don't be. It'll be fine. They've done this before. And it won't be the last time. So just watch and make up your own mind.
You've been listening to the Impromptu One Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there, and wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.